This is a Will Hemingway Productions presentation. All recordings are copyrighted. Copyright 2017. Will Hemingway. All rights reserved. Any duplication must be approved by the creator. Please visit practicepreparedness.com to obtain permission and find other materials. Welcome, this is your host, Will Hemingway, and you are listening to the Practice Preparedness Radio Show. No tinfoil hats, no ranting rhetoric, just simple, stoic, thoughtful enlightenment designed to help you adopt a healthy, life-changing, proactive preparedness mindset. No fear, no chaos. Built from a calm, risk management, loss prevention perspective. Survival is every day. Being prepared will allow you to live well and contented. The Practice Preparedness Radio Show is broadcast live every Tuesday from 6 to 7 p.m. That is 1800 to 1900 hours Eastern Time on WNJC 1360 AM in the Philadelphia, Delaware Valley area. You can also listen live via the internet and replay all of the previous shows from the practicepreparedness.com website. As Agatha Christie's great Belgian detective Hercule Poirot would say,
"In the little gray cells of the brain lies the solution of every mystery."
We would like to stimulate your little gray cells in order to create a proactive survival preparedness mindset for you. Let's get started. Welcome to today's show, June 6, 2017. I am your host, Will Hemingway. This is Practice Preparedness, and you can find us on practicepreparedness.com. In order to allay any questions up front, I wanted to explain to the listeners that WNJC 1360, my home radio station, is currently in flux. They're relocating from their most recent home in Washington Township in New Jersey, southern New Jersey, outside of Philadelphia. The station has had a gap between the time of the one location and the new one, which was somewhat unexpected. So for the moment, I will be producing the shows and posting them on the website while the station is off the air. And I'm also exploring some podcast options too, so stay tuned. You will always be able to find the show here at practicepreparedness.com. I altered the front and other pages in order to reflect the fact that you can't listen to the show live at the moment, which I will work out at some point. But meanwhile, you can listen to the show and get what I can offer to you, hopefully of use, right here on practicepreparedness.com. So today's show will be broken into two segments, both on the overarching topic of water and how it affects you and how it plays a part in your survival quotient. The first section will be on water safety, no, not playing in the water and swimming or boating. This is about safety of intake and handling of water and how to make sure that your water that you're going to cook with, eat with, etc., is safe. The second part is leaning towards hydration and assuring that. So with no further ado, we're going to get started, and you can either pick to download each one of the segments separately or just download the entire on the button of full show button, which you will see right here along with this one. Thank you for listening. This segment will focus on water safety, not as in swimming in it, but drinking, eating, cooking, and utilizing it for anything that will come in contact with your skin or you be utilized in cooking and other things. So today there was a boil water advisory issued for Trenton, parts of Trenton, New Jersey, the capital of New Jersey, the Garden State. Unfortunately, Trenton is far from a garden area. That said, when I went to check in on it and see exactly what the cause of this boil advisory was, I found a conundrum of all kinds of doublespeak, politically motivated, obviously, and governmental doublespeak that is wrapped around CYA, ostensibly. So while they are being paid to provide you water that is safe to drink, and 99.9% of people who live in anywhere in the United States, for that matter, pretty much, unless they're on well water, basically assumes that they go to the tap, they turn on the tap, and water comes out. That water is safe. They can drink it, put it in their eyes, put it in their body, cook with it, etc., and have no concern about ill effects. This, by the way, is far from true around the world. And if you Google the term boiling water or boil water advisory, you'll find what I did, which was pretty stunning. There were 4.1300, so that's 4,130,000 results came back in 0.72 seconds on Google. And that was of listings of all boil water advisories around the United States that were listed and tracked in Google. Now, of course, some of them go back several years, but this will give you a handle on how often that this problem happens. Are you aware that this happens? How would you know that this happens so that you can do something about it? So this is, again, I constantly try to bring people back around to this point. Lots of preppers especially love the idea of doomsday. They're going to create this doomsday thing. They're going to hunker down, and they're going to be the lone survivor that's going to make them be the king of the mountain. This is not the way it's going to work. The problem is hundreds of thousands of people within these service areas that are being provided water are being affected, and the long-term health effects are stunning. Because it's not something like smoking a cigarette or shooting up something or working in a place where you have 100 people all have the exact same disease at the same time, and it becomes completely and irrevocably obvious that they were dying as a result of, say, asbestos or some other chemical effect that they have been in contact with. In this situation, there are disparate people in different areas living different lives, having different jobs, but they share a common thing, which is that they all draw their water from that area. So let me go into a little picture of what I found. So I looked online. I went to the Trenton Water Works website, and I looked to see what the official advisory was. And it said that until further notice that people, about 35,000 people who live from the Delaware River to Prospect Street and Bellevue Avenue to Prospect Street to Pennington Ave to Purry Street to South Lincoln Ave, to Liberty Street, and Duck Island. Now, for those of you who don't live in that area, that's a pretty good hunk size area along the Delaware River that cuts through along the edge of Trenton and Route 29. So this is significant. 35,000 people who this morning woke up, turned on the tap, made their tea, made their coffee, cooked, drank, brushed their teeth, maybe took a shower, gargled in the shower, opened their eyes in the water, and all of those areas are affected now by that. And those people, depending on whether they took a hot shower, all these things come together to represent a very big problem. So technically, according to the most recent posting at 11:25 p.m., they released information saying, and I quote, Trenton Water Works on Tuesday announced there was a potential or actual threat to the water quality. The mayor said there is a technical issue at the city's water treatment plant on Monday that caused chlorine levels to drop temporarily. The boil water advisory remains in effect until repairs are made. And then so forth, it goes on. Customers are also advised not to swallow water while showering or bathing. Rinse hand-washed dishes with a diluted bleach solution, or clean them in a dishwasher using hot and dry cycles. Do not provide pets with drinking water that has not been boiled and cooled. So, we can begin to learn some things from this statement. The first part of what we learn from this statement is what I asked when I called them on the telephone and called their office directly to ask them for more information. The girl was very courteous who answered the phone, and she gave me obviously she was reading her response, which was, our official statement is that there is no specifics on what the problem is. But there is a boil-only requirement advisory. So my question was very simple to her. I said, look, if I'm going to tell people what to do, I need to know, is this biological threat or is this a VOC, a volatile organic or inorganic chemical threat? To which she repeated the same statement, saying that that was their official statement. And I had no interest in getting her in trouble, so I wasn't going to give her a hard time and push it any further. That said, now, hours later, we find embedded in this wiggle worm response, quote, announced there's a potential or actual threat. What's that? It's either a threat or it's not a threat. So what we get is that they don't want to even be specific enough to protect you or give you the information that you need to protect yourself. This doesn't make them evil, like many people will jump out and say. This makes them human. This is the ultimate game of CYA. Do I want to throw myself under the bus? No. So I'm going to give you as little as possible so you can't use it against me later on and get me fired because I didn't, or someone under me who I never even met didn't do their job, or some component failed, etc., etc. Again, as always, when we talk about survival, not prepping, but real preparedness, real thoughtful mindset of survival and self-reliance, what we need to recognize is, as I've said plenty of times before, as my friend in Japan used to say to me, William-san, in Japan, we fix problem, not blame. You American, you waste so much time fixing blame, you never fix problem. Don't waste your time trying to fix blame. This is what they do all day long, every day on the news. They want to point a finger at somebody so they have the boogeyman. And then they out the boogeyman so that it gets another day's worth of news and you tuning in to listen. This is not what you should be doing. You should be saying to yourself, okay, I did not know, and I have just taken a shower. So let's pick this apart for a second. If you go into the water, say into a lake or a stream, and it has Giardia and Cryptosporidium in it, which almost every standing body of water in the world does at this point, that means it has been contaminated with some form of fecal matter, and in that fecal matter there are protozoa that will attack you and your body. And because you spend most of your life drinking water that comes from a tap somewhere that has chlorine or chlorinamide or some version thereof in it, you have killed most of the bacterium and the gut flora that is in your body that is there to protect your body from those bad bacterium. There is no way to kill Cryptosporidium unless you get it to 248 degrees to get 100% of it out. As you know, boiling water only brings it to 212 degrees. This is why all of my regular students carry a small pressure cooker in their kit when they're on the move, because they can take that, make a fire, put several quarts of water, depending upon the size of it, into the pressure cooker, run the pressure cooker for 15 minutes, take it out, cool it, and voila, you have clean, safe water. Here's the other part of it. I went on to CDC's website to make sure that I was most current with what the systems are and what they advise, and I looked to see. And let me just give you a little feel for the protection issues in the different types of filtration, because a lot of preppers and a lot of hikers like to use handheld portable filtration units. So let's look at that for a moment. So filtration, this comes right from the CDC's website. I'm going to put this on the page for today's show so that you can actually look at their chart, and I'm going to give you a few other references also on there. But let's talk about this for a second. So filtration, there are three basic recognized versions: microfiltration, ultrafiltration, and nanofiltration. So microfiltration will reasonably remove microfiltration, Cryptosporidium and Giardia up to 74%. Bacteria, only about 50%. Viruses, Hep A, norovirus, rotavirus, it fails. Chemicals, it fails. Ultrafiltration, it will do the protozoa and the bacteria up to 74%, but it will not succeed 100% at viruses. It gets about half of them, and it will slightly take about 20% out in the chemical side. Nanofiltration will do most of the viruses, most of the bacteria, most of the protozoa, and knock it down about 74%, and a few of the chemicals. And microfiltration, let me detail this a little more, has a pore size of roughly 0.1, so that's 0.1 microns. The problem is, they in a filter that is normally sold and says it's 0.1, unless you're getting a Sawyer, they will not guarantee an absolute micron rating. So according to the CDC, they say that a 0.1 micron means pore size ranges vary by filter from 0.05 micron to 5 micron. That's a pretty significant difference. 5 micron. Why are we calling that a 0.1 if it's a 5 micron? And this comes to an important point. You must look at filtration units that guarantee an absolute pore size. I have only found two in the world that I have ever dealt with who give an absolute pore size, and that's where you want to be. An ultrafiltration filter has a pore size of approximately 0.01, and in their tests, they found that their actual micron rating varied between 0.001 microns and 0.05 microns. Much better. Molecular weight cutoff of 13,000 to 200,000 Daltons. So that's an ultrafilter, and they remove particles based on size, weight, and the charge, whether it's a negative or a positive ion charge in that contamination. A nanofilter has a pore size of approximately 0.001, and they found that the based by filter that they ran between 0.008 microns and 0.01 micron. So this is important. Why? I know this sounds like gibberish. You can go back and play it back again so you can get it. I'm going to have this chart up. Look in the yellow area below the main chart and you'll see this all broken down. This is really important because if you are taking a carbon filter out into the elements and you think that you can safely drink water out of a stream, you are sadly mistaken. All of these tests that they did in this testing system and this chart were based upon filtering water that came from the tap. Why does this matter? Because that's based upon the premise that the tap water already met minimum government requirements for being filtered and cleaned. So they're filtering filtered water. This is really, really important. So when we look at reverse osmosis, it has a pore size of approximately 0.0001 microns. Filtration of contaminants depends highly on the amount of contaminant in the water, size of the contaminant particle, and the charge of the contaminant particle. Depending on the household's water needs, pretreatment before filtration includes and is recommended the addition of coagulants, powdered activated carbon, adjustments in pH of chlorine and concentrations, and pretreatment before it gets to an RO membrane. If you take this and drill down into this information into English, common English, we'll say. What this means to you is that they're saying that you need to filter water that comes out of your tap. So first, we'll peel that apart and say, so again, that means that the water that's coming out of your tap, even though it meets minimum government restrictions and regulations, is not really considered safe for you to drink. It's considered within reasonable limits of what can be done. And this is a critical, critical piece of the pie. Remember, you have to be a realist. There are so many people now, and there's so much demand for water that they have to deliver you water. What would you do without it? You'd die. So they say, well, this is the best we can do, and the government and the regulatory commissions come together and say, hey, are you going to tell them you go drink out of a puddle, and then they're going to get the worst water, or are you going to tell them, well, we've done the best we can, that's what we did, and deal with it? That's the question. So when you understand that that's how this game is played, you also understand that this is a warning sign to you. They are telling you something if you read between the lines, which is even when your water system that is providing you water, whether it's Trenton Works or Williamstown Works or New York City Public Works or wherever, you are expecting that you're getting quality water that you can just turn on the tap, put it in your mouth, wash your eyes out with it, and you're good to go. This is not the case. You must take control, take charge of your own situation, because this is all about your health. By the time they recognize that the water being provided through the local water commission in Gibbsboro, New Jersey, back in the 80s, was so contaminated with lead and a couple of hundred other contaminants that came from dumping from two companies that were dumping because no one knew that it was a problem way before there were laws about it. The companies were so far gone that their buildings had disintegrated and fallen over. The walls had fallen over and collapsed around a lake that it was based around, that they were drawing their water from for use for the business in the 40s and 50s, they were long gone. But in the 80s, people were dying at a rate of over 250 a year at one point from pancreatic cancer. And it was traced straight back to that from heavy metals that were dumped into the ground and in the water. There was chromium and there were sulfates and all kinds of other toxins that had gone into that water and had leached into the ground. It was actually leaching through the pipes that brought the water to the people in their homes. All that time, the people that lived there were being slowly poisoned and they had no idea. Why? Because they trusted or they were too lazy, because let's face it, the way we live today, life is simple. You don't have to do what people did in the old days and have to worry about finding water and sourcing water and what to do with your excrement when you let it go and so forth. You didn't care about that. There were not that many people. People would dig a hole, poop, cover it up, move the outhouse a little further, and that was that. You were good to go. Now we know so much more about what happens. Why is it that we just blindly trust? The answer, in my opinion, is because people don't want to be bothered. It's so complicated and it's so stressful for them to think that they actually have to care about it. So this is what the bottled water industry has been built on. And then you come back around and find out that the bottled water industry, when they're tested, that their water is not coming up safe either in regular tests. It's really scary. And when you look at the tests and what have happened, the FDA does the bottled water testing over and over every month. They find that bottled water that's being sold has failed testing, because in 2009, the New York Times wrote up an article about the fact that there were fewer and fewer regulations for bottled water, and that the GAO, the Government Accounting Office, looked and said that the FDA regulates bottled water as a food and cannot require certified lab testing or violation reporting. So when you go out to go buy a case of bottled water, remember a couple of things. Go look on the FDA and the EPA's website and see what they say if you keep that bottled water case for over 90 days. They tell you that it is not safe and it's considered toxic because the toluene in the plastic, the peat plastic, the clear plastic, not the milky plastic, that is HDPE, it's much safer. They, in the peat bottles, the clear plastic bottles that they come in, will leach so much toxin into the water that after 90 days, the FDA declares it unsafe. That's why they started putting expiration dates on the water. Because one would say, how can water go bad? Well, water can't go bad, but what's in the water that's mixed in it can be really bad. So back to the water that's coming out of your faucet. There have been incidents around the country where a 10-minute shower, because of the amount of benzene and other toxins, trichloroethylene, which is one of the main problems in that area, becomes airborne when the water is atomized. So for those of you who aren't familiar, the water coming out of your shower head is ostensibly atomizing the water. It becomes airborne as it flows toward you, and the toxin scrubs from it and goes airborne into your bathroom. So this is why, while you're grid up and you're in a normal living condition, you should have a 70 CFM fan that blows that out outside. Not in your room, not blows it around, not puts it up into your attic where it can come back down, but out a little thing that looks like a dryer vent out off of your roof or the side of your house and blows it outside so it's not building up inside of your bathroom. If you don't have one, at least open your window on the top, because remember, hot air rises, it will at least vent out and it will minimize the amount of damage. There was an incident in South Jersey about 15 years ago. I covered it on my show then, and people were getting the equivalent after testing to having smoked 2 packs of cigarettes a day if they took a 15-minute shower. So it turns out that the cause of this contamination was that the township waterworks had purchased rock from an area on the Reading Prong, and the Reading Prong, which runs down from up along Reading in Pennsylvania down through southern New Jersey, has basically 4 fingers that are uranium deposits underneath of the ground, and it slowly degrades. This is why the area has been treating their homes for years for radon and checking to make sure that there was no radon contamination. So what happened was they took rock that was contaminated with the radioactive material. They were actually passing that off into the water, and then the water was sloughing that off. Well, they were using the shower and other means, and it was releasing it into the atmosphere trapped inside of the house. This is a very common problem. This is why they abate radon in houses, especially in basements and in newer houses that are very tight. They use systems to evacuate the radon gas out of the house. So all that said and done, this is not some big conspiracy. It can be simply a series of small incidents that come together to create a problem. By the time you find out, though, it is too late. And that's why you have to do things to take effort to protect yourself. So filtration is one. One of the things that I always recommend is a simple system that has the screw-on filters. You can buy one for $25 or less in Home Depot, Lowe's, online, etc. Either yourself or have a plumber cut them into your line. Put at least 3 in line. One would be a sediment filter. A second one would be an activated carbon filter. Possibly a third version that you might need, depending upon how bad your situation is and the area, the layout that you have at your place. So there'd be a sediment, an SED, a GAC, a CTO. These are all things that you need in order to make sure that you have the basics for what it takes to remove things like chlorine and chlorinamides, which chlorinamides are very difficult to get out. They last much longer. They are a lot of the things that are killing off your gut flora, which affects other parts of your health. So these are really important. That's your beginning stage. And then for what you drink and cook with, you should be very serious about looking at a system, an RO system. You can find them at very reasonable prices now. They have 5-stage reverse osmosis drinking water systems that are good for 75 gallons per day. That's pretty high. They filter down, as I said before, down to 0.0001, which a human hair is 50 microns, so that will give you an idea of how fine it is. They take out about 1,000 plus water pollutants, including some common things like chlorine and fluoride. Remember, though, that they won't get benzene out, only the carbon filter does, and that's why you have to read the instructions very closely, or if you have someone install it, have them explain to you very, very clearly how often you need to change those filters. Have some in stock so that you can change them in the interval necessary without having all of the time down that you would have when your unit fails. So highly recommend it. There's a couple out there. iSpring RCC7 is a pretty good system. I know a lot of people who've used them with pretty good results. I have seen the post-use tests from qualified testing laboratories, and it does a pretty doggone good job. Remember, though, those test results are taken off of good water that has passed at least a minimum standards. when you get to the point where it's not passing the minimum standard, this may be the gap between you getting poisoned or just having a minimal negative effect. You would probably have to change out all the system filters in filtration units in a system like this, but at least you would have something. I also highly recommend looking not at using a screw-in filter that goes in between your shower head and the shower, but having a full house multiple carbon filtration system and get a really high quality organic carbon, hopefully from coconut husks, organic activated carbon filter, maybe two or three in a row, because it's all about dwell time. Dwell time is how long that the contaminants are in contact with the filtration unit. So carbon does not so much block something by its size, it adheres to the units, to the contamination, and adheres to the unit itself, which would be the carbon filter. Then you toss it out and you replace it with a new one. So these are important. I don't want to finish this segment without touching, at least momentarily, on the other side of that, which is to talk briefly about the fact that you also need to be able to have a means to filter when you're out. If you're on the run, if you have a grid down situation, if you're camping, if you're hiking, I still highly recommend the Sawyer filtration system. It's actually referred to as a purification system. The reason for that is that it has ultra filtration. It goes down to 0.002 absolute micron, and you still have to couple that with some type of a carbon filter. And I really recommend the Rapid Pure filters. I actually sell both of them on my website. I don't sell many things because I'm not in the business of selling things, but I highly support them. I really respect the person who owns those two companies and how they operate. So I highly recommend both of them. Either find it online or find it through me on my store, survivalgear.com. So one way or another, get one, have them. You can even use them in the house in lieu of boiling. And the final point is, if you are going to boil water in order to make it safe, at least reasonably safe, remember a couple of things. Filtration does not remove things. It just makes them inert. And only so much of it becomes inert. And the longer you boil it, the more effective it is. But it's never going to be 100% effective. Whatever was in it, if it is a biological, will be dead but still floating there. So you may get a little free protein. But the problem is, if there are volatile organic chemicals or volatile inorganic chemicals like benzene and other things, those will become airborne because most of them boil off at below 158 degrees. So they're going to become airborne in your home, going back to the same problem you have with radon, which is those poisons get trapped inside of your home. In a perfect world, you boil a large pot of water outside. If you don't have that perfect opportunity, at least open the window and turn on a fan and suck that air out, because you will take it out of your water and instead you will inhale it into your lungs, and it could even be worse than if you had just intaken it in liquaceous form. So that'll be that for this segment. Thanks for listening. That's a pretty doggone big deal. This segment is going to be dedicated to issues about water, what you need to know, how much you need it, and what you need to do about it in order to take care of yourself. So let's get started with the most important part, which is remaining hydrated. As you know, your body is made up of between 70 and 80% water, depending upon who you read and believe. That said, it's a pretty substantial amount of what makes everything in your mechanism work every day. Your brain, everything requires water. And the minimum amount of water necessary to sustain one human being for 24 hours is 2 gallons. According to the US EPA, an average family uses nearly 400 gallons of water a day. Let's get real, though. You just got rousted from your house. You're excited, heart rate's running, high stress, heavy lifting, carrying a bag, exertion, being traumatized, stressed. Most people's monthly activity level in crushed into one day. You are going to burn off food, sweat off, and use away more than these minimums. We rapidly lose hydration through the normal process of sweat, and of course, depending upon the temperature outside or inside, wherever you are, that is going to have an effect. But you can sweat, and most people do, even in the cold weather. This is why you get hypothermia, because you sweat and then the sweat freezes. Sweating via an average of 2.6 million sweat glands in the average person, the brain triggers them in order to cool our skin and through evaporation. Unfortunately, you also lose electrolytes in the process, which are salts and other important minerals, all of which affects your ability to think clearly and your body to function properly. Water keeps your membranes from drying out, eyes, mouth, nose, and other areas, your ears, maintains optimal and stable heating and cooling. It facilitates blood flow, cellular reproduction, movement of life itself. It comprises at least 3/4 of your total body mass and substance. It supports the efficient removal of toxins and waste from your internal organs, and a whole bunch of other things, including molecular messages that are sent, and especially oxygen delivery around your body through bodily fluids. Crucial. So it's really important that you understand what it is that you need to know about about water when it comes to you and your life and your survival. So fat holds water. Infants typically have around a 70 to 78% water rate percentage. By age one, they normally drop to around 65%. Interestingly, the average male and female don't share the same percentage of water. The average male normally runs approximately 60% water content, and then the average woman around 55% at age 40. With this in mind, this means that, and by the way, that contributes to aging because it causes negative impacts on your tissues, which plays a part in the aging damage to your skin and other things like that. So it's really important, though, that you learn to cut your way past the rhetoric about water treatment and go to what really matters. In another segment, I spoke about the safety of water and your intake of water, but I really want to focus and peer down on some things. So, for instance, in water myths, we have a series of water myths that people hear all the time, and they say, you know, you hear about the threes of survival and so forth. Forget about it. You need at least 2 gallons of water a day for you to survive properly. You need to be able to wash, to cleanse, to drink, to intake. Can you get to the point where you can keep in your mind that it is really crucial to recognize that when they talk about the threes of survival, and they say 3 days with 3 minutes without air, 3 hours without shelter, 3 days without water, 3 weeks without food, this means to maintain a heart rate. They are not talking about the fact that at 18 hours, you will begin getting crippling headaches from no food and from dehydration, that within 48 hours, your ability to make intelligent thought processes will have exited stage right out the window. This is really critical. So every human requires a bare minimum of 1.9 to 2 gallons of water a day. This is really important to keep in mind. So let's look at a couple of other things. Moving water. There's a lot of people who believe this myth, which is moving water is safe to drink. I had a debate with a girl one time on a hike out at Mount Tamni, and she told me, well, it just came over a waterfall. That's as good as coming through a filtration system. Well, her dog was splashing around in the water with its butt in the water. Well, it's true that drawing water from a moving stream is always better than drawing water from standing or stagnant pond or lake. Even passing over waterfalls and rocks does not filter or remove Giardia or Cryptosporidium. Moving water is a beginning, not an end. That's where you take the water from so that you can then move on and go to filter and purify the water. Remember, parasites and other microorganisms take hold in that water and they will take hold in your body. You will allow them to enter and that will be the beginning of a major problem for you. Volatile organic compounds, toxic metals that are in the water, non-organic volatile chemicals, all of these things are present commonly. You must do things to take protective stance. Standing water is straight out. Water in natural depressions and natural catches are not safe to drink. If you ever want to see evidence of that, watch one of the people who are on Naked and Afraid, who are desperate and have little to no skills, and they decide that they're so thirsty that they make a bad decision and they decide to drink water out of a depression in a rock where the birds pooped and the animals crossed over and over again and contaminated the area. You have all kinds of problems. Birds fly, they have avian flu, squirrels have bubonic plague, they flop through the puddles, and then worms and all kinds of other things, and animals like coyotes and beaver, Giardia is also known as beaver fever, and much, much more. Please make sure that you pay attention to that. It's a little late in the season now, hopefully, for us, but another myth that is out there regarding water is the myth that you can eat snow. Snow is really the worst. Snow, each flake of snow begins on a speck of dust, and often or not, that speck of dust could be a contaminant that is floating through the air. It could be one of 100 contaminants that you already recognize as being a threat to your health. When it's on the ground or stirred up, you certainly don't want to intake it. And then there are others that are fungi that float around, and there's a pink fungi that grows on top of snow. People will look at it and go, ooh, look how pretty, let's roll around in it. And that fungi, Microdochium nivalae fungus, I probably mangled the name, but it destroys crops. It greatly reduces seed germination and has also become resistant to fungicides, and you will find it growing on snow. It's what's known as pink snow mold. So this is a very common thing that's out there. So don't make the mistakes, please, that people repeat from one to another to another. You have to seriously consider what it is that is in front of you before you go to use it. And that takes us to another point, which is that of rainwater. Rainwater is a phenomenal source of water, way better for you, no matter what anyone says, than the best of a moving water stream or any other source for that matter, because at some point it has gone through the process of distillation from the sun, goes off in vapor up, becomes a cloud, and then rains down. So let me talk briefly about that. So let's apply the rules about rainwater catchment in the real world. So 1 inch of rain falls on 1 square mile area of land. The total volume of water from 1 inch of rain would be 187.1 million gallons of water. The average person in the U.S. uses 100 gallons of water to maintain their basic lifestyle. That's a total of 36,500 gallons of year per person. Do the math when you look at 1 inch of rain of 187.1 million gallons of water from 1 inch of rain that falls on 1 square mile area. And then think about it when you're hearing them talk on the news over the next few months, which I'm sure you can predict is coming, about how there's a bad drought, and it's a 100-year drought, and this is all about global warming and global climate change and so forth and so on, which has been happening for millennia, way before humans have come around, and will keep happening if we go away. The fact of the matter is the shortages of water that you heard about in California over the past few years have everything to do with them overbuilding and overpopulating. This is a topic no one wants to talk about. In a world that's based on Keynesian economics and based on the idea of spending more than you have and constantly building and spending into debt and turning places that are uninhabitable into making them inhabitable in order to make more people and allow for more population growth that's unsustainable. Remember, population grows to that which is sustainable. When it's not sustainable, they start to die until we fiddle around and interrupt that process and stop that from happening because we think we're helping like we do in Africa and other places around the world. And places that won't sustain populations then do sustain it in a very negative way because we're giving them food and drugs that may or may not be that healthy for them. So remember, when you hear the things about that in California and other drought areas, none of that should matter. There are places in India where they get 1 inch of rain a year, and entire villages survive on the water they collect from that one rainfall. And you can do something like that too. The difference is in the United States, based on a consumerism mentality, they want you to buy, buy, buy. Now all these towns have made it illegal to be off the grid. Another couple of counties, I was reading one with my son on the phone the other day. There's a place called Babcock Ranch in Florida. They built an entire community, a town on its own, that it was intended to be 100% off-grid. And they passed a law in Florida that said, you're not allowed to be off-grid. You have to be tied to the electrical grid because it's not safe for people to live without electricity. I'm a little confused about that. Why not just say, because we've invested so much money in the utility that we need them to make money and we're not going to cotton to you making it on your own and not paying. So they had to be grid tied, and they put in such a gigantic solar farm there that they can provide all the energy to that town that they need, and they don't need to go out. But it's only provided while the sun is out. So then they draw it in at night and the net metering thing comes on, and I don't want to get off track of the main point, but it's important to recognize. And the same thing has happened with water. So California, all about ecology, and they've made it illegal. They claim that the state owns the rain before it hits the ground, so you have no right to catch it. And state after state has been moving to this. Interestingly enough, a city like Philadelphia in Pennsylvania, who has the opposite problem, they have so much impermeable ground area that every time they get a substantial rain, it floods and they can't control it. They have no means to do anything with it. So what do? they now have put out to everyone. They'll even provide you with a barrel so you can catch water to use to water your plants. Because if it slows down the amount of water when it comes from the sky to the ground and you hold it for a while before it slowly dissipates, they don't have a flooding problem. In England, they had such a problem in shortage of clean water and flooding that now it's a law that requires you, when you build a home or you do more than 30% of the building in rehab, that you have to install, if I recall correctly, it's 1,500-gallon cistern in the ground at the house and hook it up so that your toilets and your laundry runs off of that, on what's known as gray water or partial filtered water, which is not potable, but they can use it for that because it's taken the pressure off of the water shortage problem and the water flooding problem, and they win. It's mandated, not punished. The thing is, nobody makes any money off of the rain falling, though I'm sure they'll figure out a way right after they figure out how to tax us for the amount of excrement coming out of us by the foot or by the pound or something, because that's how the consumerist mentality happens. Remember, this is not about free market. This is about, and this is not about capitalism. This is about consumerism driving people to work, to buy, to work, and getting around what we believe, I hope, which is to be self-sufficient, so we move further and further away from needing to buy things from others. This will give you freedom and liberty unlike any other that you will ever find. Not being tied to having to work to make money or beg for money or beg for someone else to give you something in order to survive. When you can get up in the morning knowing you are capable of growing your food, of raising your food, of doing animal husbandry, of hunting, of doing whatever, so that you supply your own protein, your own greens, your own vegetables, so that you can survive and those with you can survive on your own. The freedom, the amount of ability to sever the fetters and ties of feeling like you are a slave to someone or something are so unbelievable, it will change your life. I feel like I'm being a preacher right now, but this is really important. This is what being prepared, being a survivalist, is all about. Not prepping, throwing crap in the closet, and then going back to doing what you normally do, but being able to take care of yourself. Then, when you want to eat out at a restaurant, you go because you want something different. But if you can't, you can still take care of yourself. If you don't, you are still able to supply yourself with what you need, even if you can't do all of it. If you can do 10%, and then the next year do 20%, you can help yourself. Think about these numbers when it comes to rainwater catchment. 30 to 35% of rainwater gets evaporated into the atmosphere every year. 50 to 55% runs off into the salt oceans. The salt mixed into the rainwater makes it complex to make it potable and worthless to the groundwater table, soil, and crops. So that means that we've now shaved off 30 to 35%, 50 to 55%. So what are we talking? 80 to 90% of the water from rain gets wasted every time. Less than 10% of the rain becomes moisture in the soil feeding of and vegetation. Less than 3% actually enters into and adds to the groundwater table. The fact is that rain comes down generally at a rate and a volume far exceeding the ability of surrounding environment to absorb it and make use of it. Destruction of habitats, uncontrolled excess erosion. This is why having thoughtful means to absorb water into the ground table, into the groundwater table, is so important. This is why you saw mandated 10 or 15 years ago, depending where you are, that every time they build a new building or build a commercial location and they put down impermeable material for a parking lot, they mandate a certain size based upon the size of the impermeable area for a catchment basin for all the water to run down in. Now remember, the problem is that in that asphalt that they're laying, if it was concrete, it would be substantially different. But in the asphalt that they're laying, there are all kinds of petroleum products, chemicals, and all kinds of other things that are in that asphalt that in the heat of the summer will be released into that water as it washes off. I experienced it firsthand, reminded yesterday, it had rained lightly and I came to stop at a stop sign and I slid a pretty substantial way up to the stoplight because it hadn't rained in a while, it was dry, all the oils came out and then it mixed with the rainwater and it was very slick. It was like being on glass. So this is important. You can start by catching rainwater out of your downspouts. If you utilize a basic system, you can go on YouTube. There are hundreds of viable videos showing you how to divert the rainwater from your downspouts into 55-gallon drums, into IBCs. Think about it. This is an opportunity to sever another tie. You are not allowed to disconnect from water, but you can cut your water intake dramatically by catching water. You must learn, though, and it's way too complicated for me to cover in one or a couple segments. I do a class on it every so often. Go to the site, look at the site for this show. I will have links to my pages on practice survival that you can read about it. This is a useful skill, but recognize and remember one thing. Your needs are not at threat of water shortages if you have taken care of your own. You must have means to safely store water for yourself, and you must have it on hand before you need it, not when you have no water to take to hold. You have to constantly have it and rotate it. Whatever way you choose to do it, and then grow from how you start. You can start by buying gallon bottles from Walmart. They, by the way, have been one of the highest rated ones that have tested over and over again well over the past 10 years. They're in HDPE bottles, so they're not going to leach. Remember, though, they will leak after they sit for a while, and if you put any pressure on them, they will flood leak out. So they are not long-term storage. You need to have a long-term storage means for water so that you can put it away. If nothing else, buy 10 or 15 5-gallon water cooler type bottles and put them away in your basement in a cold, dark area. Water never goes bad. It's only contaminants that are added or something that's in the water. You can always filter it after. If you have a sewer system or you have a rapid pure filter, you can filter it after to make it viable. If it starts to taste stale, it's because it's lost the oxygen out of it. You can pour it from one bottle back to the other, and it will pick up air and be aerated and be better. But these are critical things to recognize that you need to pay attention to. If you don't, it will come back and bite you. So again, get to know your water needs, get to know what to do to have water, how to handle it, how to purify it, how to filter it, how to make it safe, how to move it reasonably well and easily. These are all things that you have to think about now, because if you have to do that later, I challenge you to look at how hard it is to carry 5 gallons of water at 8.35 pounds a gallon from your car to your house, and then think about having to carry a bucket sloshing around from a water source like a lake or a stream up to an encampment that you have up a hill away from the water for a half a mile, and think about how well you're going to do with that day in and day out. You have to think about these things ahead of time and be prepared to handle them in a thoughtful way. That'll be it for this segment, and I'll touch more on these topics later on. So that'll be it for this week's show on water, all about water, water and your survival. Don't wait for someone else to take care of it for you. It will be too late or you will be disappointed. Remember, have water, find water, purify water, move water, carry water, protect water, and store water. These are the things. Learn how to source it, learn how to clean it, learn how to purify it, and learn how to make sure that it stays clean so that you can use it. We are spoiled by having good quality water come out of the faucet when we walk up and turn the handle. This does not always happen, as I have pointed out during the show in segment one. Please don't hesitate. Don't wait. Give yourself a launch ahead. Do what it takes to guarantee that you will have water. It is one of the most critical pieces to your gear and your survival. Before I leave, I wanted to remind you that with the station being in flux, I would highly recommend following me on Twitter and on Facebook. I will be posting about the changes, relocation information, and such. And in addition, I will also be consistently posting about classes that I'm giving and appearances. So check with us there. Sign up. All the links are right across the top of the page at practicepreparedness.com. And on practicesurvival.com, you'll find the links to all of them that you can sign up to. If you have any questions, interests, if you'd like to come on the show, feel free to mail me off of the form that is on almost every single page on all of the websites. So, in conclusion, I just want to remind you that Not Night is coming up on Thursday, July 15th, and it's through my meetup.com groups. You will see on the front page on the right-hand side, there are buttons and links to take you to all of them, so you can sign up and come and see us. It is from 7 to 9 p.m. That would be 1900 to 2100 hours Eastern Standard Time. I'm Will Hemingway. Thanks for joining us. And that, unfortunately, will be it for this edition of the Practice Preparedness Radio Show. I am your host, Will Hemingway. Thank you for spending your time with us today. Don't forget to click the links at the top of practicepreparedness.com, to follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and meetup.com. Until next time, please don't wait until it's too late. Live proactively. Act with purpose every day. Have a plan and practice. Because, as I always say, there is no disaster when you are prepared. We hope that you'll join us next time for the Practice Preparedness Radio Show. Have a good day.